If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel.
The officer takes my passport and he goes, "Mr. Hansen, are you bringing anything back?" And for the first time in my life, I lied. I said, "No, officer, I'm not." And I was like, holy shit, what a rush. From that day forward, I was chasing that rush. One of the coaches for the football team saw me working out and he's like, "You need to try out for football." He made the football team. Troy Polamalu, Reggie Bush, who was dating Kim Kardashian, Matt Leinart was dating Paris Hilton. Mm-hmm. Everywhere we went out, we had like the red carpet. Everyone's seeing me in the gym and they're like, "Damn, this dude's fucking jacked. What are you taking?" I literally became this like black market doctor.
So cocaine becomes a thing.
I see there's a market. Yeah. I'm like, okay, what are you guys paying? They're paying $100 for a gram bag. I get it for 20 and I sell it for 60. People are going to come to me. So I go to practice. I come back from training table with my fraternity brothers. Goes, "We got a problem." And he goes, "We're out." I said, "Oh, well, that's not a problem. That's a good problem." And then he eventually said, "How would you like to do what you're doing now, but in Australia? And I'm going to pay you $1 million a day." And El Jefe puts me in the Four Seasons Hotel and he's like, "Get a room." I'm holding this box and it's heavy. I said, "Uncle Louie, get over here now." There was 10 kilos. And 20 minutes later, he comes back with $1 million cash. My trainer goes to the hotel that he's supposed to meet Robin Hood and I give him $2.5 million. 3 hours later, I get a phone call. I answer, he goes, "We got a problem. I lost the money." They arrest Sean Carolyn, my trainer. They find the 700 grand.
Robin Hood, what he had done is called the police. So you're at 3.2, that you're out to the cartel. But let's talk about prison for a minute.
Yeah.
And you hear what? You have 21 years?
21 years. I would start making this protein ice cream. I built this brand in a federal prison cell. I want to be the Jeff Bezos of protein ice cream.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Well, there are very few documentaries that break out of the true crime bubble and turn into a full-on cultural conversation. Cocaine Quarterback is one of them. Produced by Mark Wahlberg and now streaming on Amazon, the series pulls back the curtain on the life of Owen Hansen. And today, he's here with us in studio. The documentary was filmed while Owen was still in federal prison. Now, newly back into the world, he's sitting down to talk about what led to that moment, what it was like watching his life unfold on screen, and what he's trying to build next. Owen Hansen grew up in Redondo Beach, California. He was an athlete from a young age. He was on a volleyball scholarship at USC. But when he got redshirted, he decided that he needed to get stronger. So one thing led to another, and after using some steroids, he made it onto the USC football team. From the outside, it looked like a very familiar American trajectory, talent, opportunity, momentum. But behind that path was a different one forming. What began with selling steroids to teammates escalated over time, first into drugs, then into something much larger. According to federal court records, those choices ultimately led Owen into running a large-scale drug trafficking and illegal gambling operation. One decision built on another, access created opportunity, and eventually he found himself at the center of an operation that prosecutors described as expansive and sophisticated. He was arrested, charged, and sentenced to 21 years in federal prison. He ended up serving roughly 9.5 years. But while he was still incarcerated, his story became the subject of the Amazon docuseries Cocaine Quarterback, produced by Mark Wahlberg, a series that pulled back the curtain on how a college athlete became a federal inmate and how ambition, environment, and unchecked momentum can completely redirect a life. Now, Owen is out, and today he is here, sitting across from me, to talk about it himself. Not through court documents, not through headlines, not through his docuseries, but directly what happened, how it happened, where it went wrong, and what life looks like now after prison, after the punishment, and after the public judgment. We get into the rise, the fall, the betrayals, the mistakes, and what it actually takes to rebuild when your name is forever attached to a story like this. Because Misunderstood isn't about sound bites, it's about sitting with people long enough to understand how a life unfolds and what comes next. This is Owen Hansen. Owen, thank you so much for coming all the way from California or wherever you are now to meet me here for Misunderstood.
Yeah, nice to have you. Thanks for having me, Rachel.
Of course. So where do you live right now?
I live in California.
You do? Yeah. Okay. Near your dad or?
No, Orange County area. My father's retired now. He's in Montana.
Okay.
But
I know that you just recently got out of halfway house, right?
Yeah.
So like getting out of prison and not and starting from zero, like what are you doing? How did you like get your own place?
So I got released from Federal Bureau of Prison in 2024 and they put me in a halfway house for 20 months.
Mm.
And
oh, so you could work.
Yeah, you could work.
Okay.
You could go to the gym and you could work.
Right.
And you could do it Monday through Saturday.
Okay.
So I literally went every day. I would go to the gym in the morning, and then I would start making this protein ice cream.
Right.
And this, I built this brand in a federal prison cell.
Right.
And I was like, this is what I got to do. Like,
got
this
it.
Is, this is my calling.
Got it. All right. So we will get there. We're going to spool back to this and what you're doing now. But I was just curious because I've had so many people on that have had to start from zero when they are such a hustler and they have this personality that they are addicted to the good life, right? Which we all kind of are, but you really had it and lived it. So that's got to be the hardest thing to humble yourself.
Yeah. Very humbling, right? Going from $1 million a day to going to $100 a day.
Right? Yeah.
So it's a big change.
Yeah. And feeling like you have to rely on people to maybe get you there again must be really humbling too.
Yeah, definitely. I hate asking for help.
Yeah.
And whether it's a parent or a sibling or a woman or a friend, whatever it is, it's kind of humiliating.
Yeah.
If 43 years old, you shouldn't be asking for help.
But, right.
But it's part of the comeback, and now I have to accept it, and people are willing to help, and I'm going to take it.
Yeah, I love that. All right, so let's start at the beginning. You're from Redondo Beach, California. You grew up with two parents, a sister. I know that at some point they split up, which changed your life a little bit, right?
I don't think a little bit. I think a lot. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think as far as women in my life, I think it probably went wrong for me when my mom left and my sister was gone. I think I was 8 years old. My sister was 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where, you know, people I talked to, you know, for the last 20 years about relationships are like, it started with your mom leaving.
Yeah.
And it's a tough pill to swallow, right? But you start to realize maybe that is the reason.
Yeah.
You know, I've had girlfriends. I remember breaking up with girlfriends. It was so hard to let them go, right? Because you're just like, fuck, it feels like I'm losing my mom again.
Yeah.
And that's how it's been every time. Like, I'm in a relationship and I lose that person. It's like, fuck, I lost another one.
Wow. So I remember you saying on your docuseries that like your dad was like, we don't cry in this family. Yeah. Like, let's go get the surfboard, get the volleyball, let's go. And you developed a love, a passion, and a talent for volleyball that actually got you a scholarship to USC, right?
Yeah, that was volleyball and surfing was like our life, right? You grew up in the South Bay, the Redondo Beach, the Hermosa Beach. All you do is play volleyball and surf.
Yeah. And, you were good. You were strong, you were good, but naturally,
all-American,
right?
Yeah, all-natural, all-American volleyball player. I think I was number three in the world at one time at the high school level.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, and during this time, though, I mean, I'm just so curious, as I watched the docuseries about, like, because my parents were divorced when I was five, and I had a brother. He was a half-brother, though. And so he went and he lived with his mom in California, and I moved from Alaska. I was born in Anchorage, Alaska. I moved to New York with my mother. Didn't see him again until, long story short, I was in boarding school. I ran away, and I called him, and I was now 15. And I hadn't seen him since I was four. So did you have any relationship with your sister or your mom after they left?
Yeah, you know, it was strange because I'd get to see him like twice a year, but it was hard for me because what would happen was I'd go see my mom for like, say, Thanksgiving or Christmas, and my sister would go see my dad. It was like a swap.
Oh, wow.
So I never really got to hang out with my sister. And then my sister ran away too at like 16 years old, and she started using heroin, and it was like, fuck, that my poor sister, she's going through the same problem I'm going through, but she's just doing it in a different way. You know, she started using drugs. And I remember my father, he's like, man, we got to get your sister. She's on the streets of San Francisco using heroin. I'm like, oh, fuck, that's awful. My thing was volleyball. Like, that's going to be my high. Mm-hmm. Her high was obviously drugs. And unfortunately, you know, we had to rescue her off the streets of San Francisco and clean her up. And, you know, luckily she's clean today. But
wow, that's great.
That's how she handled this this divorce, I feel.
Yeah.
The separation of our parents.
Right. And do you have a relationship with your mother now?
Yeah. You know, my mother and I, we speak once a week. We call each other on Sundays.
Oh, good.
She visited me maybe two or three times while I was in federal prison, which was not as much as I would like, but at the end of the day, at least I got to see her.
Yeah. Right? And also, who knows, it may have been really hard for her to see you there.
Oh, for sure. No doubt. Yeah. She didn't want to be part of the documentary because it was hard for her to, you know, speak about this matter, right?
Right. So, all right, for people that haven't seen the docuseries yet and don't know your story and they haven't read your book, I just want to take them through it because it's really an incredible story. And you're this like kind of, you know, the anti-hero a little bit, but you've just lived this fascinating life. So you get to USC, you're playing volleyball, you get redshirted because you don't have the overhead?
The arm strength?
Arm strength,
and vertical jump.
Okay, there you go.
I was playing behind an All-American. They redshirted me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck, man. I was so, it was like you lose your volleyball family is the same thing as losing your mom. It's like that same feeling I had because this volleyball team was like my new family.
Yeah.
You go to college and this is your bros.
Yeah.
And then when you get redshirted, it's like getting cut and you lose that family.
Yeah.
I was so bummed. I went down back home and I was like, man, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to take steroids. I'm going to work on that vertical jump.
Right.
I'm going to work on that arm strength and I'm going to come back and I'm going to be twice as bigger and stronger.
Right. And at the same time though, I want people to understand like who you were. You kind of come from a blue collar family, right?
Yeah.
You go to USC, everyone's flashy and fancy and has the black cards and the whatever from their parents. You come home and steroids are not cheap, right?
No, expensive.
So you go to Tijuana.
I had to go to Tijuana.
Okay. Tell that story.
I went to the Farmacia. And I tell people I had to go down there because I couldn't afford to purchase them in America, right? Mm-hmm. I think like a bottle was like $300 and I didn't have two nickels to rub together.
Yeah.
So I went down to Tijuana and it was like $20 for a vial.
Right. You
know? So the markup was incredible. And I was like, okay, I'm going to purchase this stuff here and I'm going to figure out a way to get it across.
Yeah.
And I remember the Farmacia, this lady spoke perfect English, so I didn't have to speak Spanish. And she's like, she's laying out all these vials of testosterone and cypionate and propionate and stuff I've never even taken or heard of.
Yeah. Right?
And then she's giving me pills of Anavar and Winstrol. And I'm like, fuck, how am I going to get this shit back?
Yeah.
She gave me a sandwich bag and I literally dumped the pills in there, the vials. And I'm just looking at myself like, okay, I'm not going to just be able to put this in my pocket and walk across the border. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was like, can I purchase some of that medical tape? She had this medical tape. I grabbed the medical tape and I went into the bathroom and I literally taped this bag, the sandwich bag up, and I made it like a banana.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, I didn't put it in the hole, Rachel. I put it in the crack.
Right.
Yeah. And I literally just held it there for like 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm holding this banana between my compressor shorts and my balls. And I walk across the border and I get to the customs line. And you got to remember, I've come from the strict, my dad's very strict, never lied, never missed a day of school. Like, we are by the book.
Yeah.
And the officer takes my passport and he goes, "Mr. Hansen, are you bringing anything back?" And for the first time in my life, I lied. I said, "No, officer, I'm not." And he says, "Welcome back to America." And I was like, holy shit, what a rush.
Right.
Like, that was the first time I've ever lied and the first time I've ever smuggled anything into the United States. And I tell people from that day forward, I was chasing that rush until I was working for the biggest cartel, smuggling tons of cocaine into the other countries.
Right. So how soon do you see the results?
Two, 3 weeks.
So all of a sudden you're like, I love this. I got to do this again.
Well, it's just, you're like, wow, this stuff's awesome.
Right. And then, but is that what got you to play football?
Yeah. One of the coaches for the football team saw me working out and he's like, "I thought you were a volleyball player." And I said, "Yeah, I got cut." They're like, "Well, you need to try out for football. You're the size of a tight end, and we're short on tight ends right now."
Had you played football?
Never.
Never.
Never in my life. My dad wouldn't let me play football. He said it's too dangerous.
Right. It is.
And I just respected my father because I was under his, you know, guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the coach told me this, I was like, you know what? Fuck. My dad can't get mad at me. I'm an adult now.
Right.
And I was like, okay, let's go. Let's try it. What do I got to lose?
Right.
And there was 50 walk. It was a walk-on tryout, and there was 50 guys that showed up. And by the time it was all said and done, they had me bench pressing 225, 25 times, 26 times, which is like NFL combine numbers. Vertical jump 36 inches. I ran a 4.640, which is fast, and I was, you know, I'm just juiced out of my mind, and nobody knows, right? They just think I'm just beast
workout king, yeah.
And I remember, like 2 weeks later, they put a list on Pete Carroll's door, and there was one name on the list, and it was my name.
No way.
Yeah, and I told my dad, and my dad's like, "No fucking way! Like, you've never played football your whole life, son."
Right.
And he wasn't mad. Like, I thought he was going to be mad because he didn't want me playing football. But he was like, "Dude, that's the best football team in the world, like, for college sports, USC football at that time."
Mm-hmm. And for people that don't know, explain, like, some of the players that were on the team that went pro and they're dating Paris and Kim.
Yeah, it's Carson Palmer, Troy Polamalu, Reggie Bush, who was dating Kim Kardashian, mm-hmm. Matt Leinart was dating Paris Hilton,
mm-hmm.
Sean Cody, the list goes on. I think
so you guys were all celebrities kind of at your own right.
Everywhere we went out, we had, like, the red carpet. Because you got to remember, at that time, we didn't have an NFL team in L.A.
Right.
So we were the NFL team.
Yeah.
And we had Denzel Washington coming to our games. Snoop Dogg would come to our practices once a week. Will Ferrell, Shaquille O'Neal, everyone was on our sidelines.
Amazing.
It was awesome.
So I had Todd Marinovich
on our
show. And he was before you, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, way before.
Yeah. But it ruined him. But he had the same kind of, you know, thing where, you know who he is? Like,
quarterback.
Yeah. Robo QB or whatever they call it. And fascinating story because he was the one that's at the time when he started doing all the drugs and he was playing amazing.
Yeah.
But he completely fell apart. And it was really tough to watch and interview him because you could tell it was a daily struggle. Like, he was still struggling. And the regret, you know, was so big. But what was interesting for him is that the problem in his mind is that everyone else thought he could play so well, and he was such a hero to so many people. He didn't even like playing.
Wow.
And so for him, it was like, what makes me happy? And I'm disappointing all these people. And people would see him like homeless and like strung out and be like, God, what happened to you? What a mess. And he was thinking, you don't know my life. I didn't want to play. Like, you don't know what my struggle is, but my struggle isn't that I'm not playing. My struggle is like that I can't find my happiness. So it was really
poor guy.
Yeah, interesting to talk to him. But he talked so much about what it was like to play for USC.
Yeah.
And you were a celebrity.
It was an amazing feeling.
Yeah. So you are what? Now all of a sudden guys want to look like you and be like you and they want to get steroids from you.
Yeah, I'm a walk-on, right? So I'm not saying I'm some great football player, but everyone's seeing me in the gym and they're like, damn, this dude's fucking jacked, right? And everyone's like, what are you taking? What can I use to get bigger? What can I use to cut up? you know, what can I use for my injuries, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I literally became this like black market doctor. They started calling me Dr. O-Dog.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you got an ACL injury? Okay, let's get you on some growth hormone, some test sip. I said, I'll get that to you next week.
And so you started to understand the drugs and know what was good for what and become like the doctor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I started going back to Mexico and getting more for my teammates, you know.
So now you knew how to do it and you had a route and you had the people. And
I started
easy.
Figuring it out. Yeah. And then
how often were you going down to Tijuana?
Like every 2 weeks. Wow. And then the fraternity kids like, hey, we're trying to stay up late so we can study. I'm like, I'm going to prescribe you Adderall.
Right.
And I'd go down there and get Adderall.
Right.
Oh, we can't sleep. We've been partying. Oh, I got you Xanax.
Right.
Like, yeah. So that this is like people started coming to me.
Wait. So how are you feeling all that in your balls?
Like, listen,
it's getting more and more.
To be honest, Rachel, I'm not going to lie. What happened was I got patted down one time and I was wearing a sweatshirt in the summer.
Oh.
And it was like I had to wear the sweatshirt in the summer because I was so big.
Yeah.
And I didn't want them to see I was like this jacked guy.
Yeah.
They patted me down and they went to the area and I was like, okay, that's the last time I'm smuggling. So I started using girls to smuggle.
Oh, no
way. I'd bring girls down to Papa's and beer and we'd have tacos and beers and tequila. And for $100, I'd give them, you know, stuff to put in their bras and testosterone to put in the vaginas, not inside their
vagina, but
you get down there, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And they were glad to do it.
They're and
like,
no one got caught.
No one ever got caught.
Wow.
But they were loving it. I mean, $100 back then was great money for them.
Like, yeah.
And they get to drink and have a good time with me.
Right.
And that's what we did. And they enjoyed it. And
now, at what point did it switch to bigger drugs and cocaine?
I would say probably my sophomore year in the fraternity. Mm-hmm. And I noticed everyone in the fraternity was doing cocaine. And I was like, man.
Had you gotten into it?
No, I hadn't. I just remember, my dad was so strict. Mm-hmm. We didn't do anything.
Do they drug test you guys on the team back then?
Yeah, okay. They test you, but usually they test you during season.
Okay.
So I knew.
Steroids show up in that?
Yeah, of course. But none of the guys on the team did any steroids during the season.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Ever.
Including me. Wow.
Because if you get tested,
yeah,
it's impossible. If you get tested and you test positive for steroids, it's over.
It's over.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, and you were still able, I don't know how it works, you're still able to maintain your size and your body without it?
Even yeah, you can, but you have to literally eat like crazy. Because you remember, the season's only, you know, 2.5-3 months. So you're
eating
creatine and protein and I'm eating like 400 grams of protein.
Got it.
So here's a ways.
Okay. Love that. You understand protein early on because it affects you later.
Yes.
Okay. So cocaine becomes a thing. You realize.
There's a market.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, what are you guys paying? They're paying $100 for a gram bag. I'm like, oh, wow. I grew up in a town where there's Mexican gangs, right? And I grew up in Redondo Beach. There's a Northside Redondo gang, which is ran by the Mexican mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these guys are my friends. I went to high school with them. So I literally go back to Redondo where I'm from and I ask these guys, I say, hey, what do you guys pay for this? And they're like, you know, for you, we can give it to you for $20 a gram. I'm like, okay.
Well,
I'm like, okay, I'm doing the numbers. I'm like, fuck, I can undercut everybody and still make triple of what, you know, what it cost.
Right.
I'm like, so it's just math 101. I'm like, okay, if I get it for 20 and I sell it for 60, I undercut the market by $40. People are going to come to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I literally had this friend of mine drive and drop off a styrofoam container and it had 8 ounces of Colombian cocaine. And I was like, man, what do you do with this? Like, I don't even know where to begin. He gives me a scale and a bunch of gram bags and a spoon. He's like, okay, you put the blow in here and you put it right here. You tear the scale. And I'm learning like in his like minivan.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm like, okay. Okay, and then I literally, like, I'm so scared to have it.
Right.
And I'm like, my fraternity house is like a block over. I'm like, fuck, I don't want to get caught. And like, run in the fraternity house and like, throw it in my room. And I'm
right.
Because we're now in the fraternity house, you're in a bubble, right? You're like,
yeah.
You have nothing to worry about.
Do you have a roommate at the time?
Yeah, I have a pledge brother.
Oh, God. Okay.
And
did he even notice what was going on?
Oh, I had to tell him.
Oh, you had to. Okay.
I made a business deal with him.
I was going to say, you have to pay him.
I'm a businessman, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I said, I got an offer you can't refuse. He says, what is it? I already knew he liked coke. So I was like, this is where I'm going to get him. I said, for every ounce you sell, there's 28 grams in an ounce.
Uh-huh.
For every 27 you sell, you get the 28th one for free.
Nice.
I said, we got 8 of them here, 8 ounces. I said, let's bag them all out. I said, we'll bag them together. and I'm going to go to football practice, and I want you to tell all the fraternity brothers we got it for $60. Everyone else is paying $100. And I'm telling you, every beta that I grew up with in college all did a gram of Coke a day. It's like having a cocktail.
Okay.
It's part of the tradition, right? Uh-huh. So I go to practice. I come back from training table. It's like 6 hours goes by, and I get back, and I get into my room, and my fraternity brothers goes, he's like lit. I'm like, oh no, he did all the Coke, right? He's like, we got a problem. I'm like, fuck, what's the problem? He goes, we're out. I said, oh, well, that's not a problem. That's a good problem,
yeah.
Right? And then my mind's like going, okay, this is going to be my hustle.
Right.
Because everyone's doing it.
Right.
And that just happened like that.
So this is your sophomore year, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, so give me an idea of how much money you start to be making.
I'm making like $2,000 a week, and then it goes to $3,000, and next thing you know, fraternities and other houses are buying it from my roommate. I'm having him handle everything.
Right. Because
remember, I'm this athlete.
Right.
I can't be doing this.
Got it.
And he's literally dropping off ounces at the TKO house, the Zeta's house, the Sigma Chi house, the right. SEE house, and like...
And is it mostly cocaine?
Yeah, everything. Whatever you want. Okay. You want ecstasy, we got that.
But did you get into hard shit like heroin?
No, okay. Never that.
So just party drugs.
Yeah. I was an anti-heroin guy because my sister.
Yeah, right. I understand. So at some point, do you go clean and say, I'm going to have to get a real job? Because to go from making money like that to having a 9 to 5 where you're making like minimum wage would suck, I can imagine.
Rachel, you know what I told myself? I said, I'm going to do this just to keep up with the Joneses in college because this is how I'm going to be able to pay to go out on a date with a sorority girl or take out my football teammates or my fraternity brothers. Like, I didn't fit in. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm this blue-collar kid. So I was like, now I finally fit in. And I agree what I did was wrong, but it was like, I'm surviving now.
Yeah.
And I told myself, as soon as I'm done with college, like graduate and get that degree and get that 9 to 5, I'm done. Like, this is what I went to USC for,
right.
For the connections.
What did you, what did
I majored in public policy and planning with an emphasis in real estate development.
So you were hoping to go into something.
I was hoping to get in real estate. Yeah. And it happened. I got my first job out of college was for this big, big commercial real estate developer. Big USC alumni, and he gave me like a 6-figure salary.
Oh,
and I was young, right? I'm 21 years old. And I'm like, this is it. This is what we go to USC for. I don't need to do anything else. And I worked and loved it. And the recession hits. I'm like, oh no, I lose my job.
Okay.
And I start to scramble. What am I going to do? And just like I scrambled for volleyball and made the football team, just like I scrambled to go down to Tijuana to get steroids to support my life. I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And I was like, okay, I love sports. I know a lot of athletes. I know a lot of rich people now. I went to USC. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that. I'm going to be a bookie. And you think a bookie, but a bookie for me is like, that's the perfect job for someone that's an athlete.
Right. But how did you know anything about it? Had you been a gambler?
I didn't. That's okay. The thing. But I
but
had.
You knew a guy, right?
What happened was one of the guys that was working on our project when I was working for the real estate development company, he was a contractor, and he was the contractor for all our development. And I always saw him on the phone betting on the Dodgers and the Raiders, and he's betting like $20,000 mm-hmm. a game. And I was like, man, whoever's on the other line is making some serious money.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, when I heard that and I lost that job, I was like, you know what? That's what I want to be, a bookie. I want to be like that guy's, whoever was on the other line.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, man, who could I go to? I said, oh, yeah, we have an Italian friend in our family. My dad's friend, one of his fishing buddies, was a bookie, and he was an Italian dude. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go ask my dad if I can get a job with that guy. Uh-huh. His name is Uncle Tony.
Okay.
And Uncle Tony didn't want to do it. My dad didn't want me to get involved. I said, Dad, I have no job. I just lost my job. Mm-hmm. I said, it's temporary. Give me like a year until I get back on my feet. And I begged my dad, and finally he made the introduction. And Uncle Tony, it's like, man, your dad doesn't want me to do this, but I'm going to allow you to. I said, Uncle Tony, I have the best network. You wouldn't believe it.
Now, wait, for people listening and for me, for my ignorance, is there any part of being a bookie that is legal at the time?
At the time, no. Okay. It was illegal. It's a gray area because you're basically taking bets through an online platform, usually in Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. And you're exchanging cash in the United States.
And they didn't have like DraftKings and that back then?
No, back then it was just street bookies.
Okay.
Like mobsters, right?
Got it.
Yeah. And I literally said, man, I'm going to show you how good I am. He's like, I'll pay you 20%. Whatever you bring, you get 20%. And I was a kid. I was like, okay. And literally in 6 months, I had this whale. I went to that contractor and he lost $1 million.
No way.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, fuck. I'm 21 years old I'm 23 now. I'm like, wow, this is a lot of money. And right. I bring him $1 million and he gives me 200,000, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that was pretty easy.
Yeah.
Like, that was just one guy. Like,
and opening your Rolodex, all the guys you played with are now pros, right?
Making big contracts.
Yeah.
So I start using these pro athletes to gamble with me. I start using these fraternity kids. Then I start bringing my clients that are betting with me, like, to meet the pro athletes because they're my friends.
Oh, right.
So it's like perfect. Yeah. They get to meet the guys they're betting on sports.
Right. Right?
It's cool. It's like a casino host, right? And I'm offering everything from like, okay, you want a private jet to fly down to Costa Rica to visit my office? Okay, come on down.
And so now you have this like concierge business kind of that goes with it.
Yes.
All right, I'm getting it. And did anything ever make you nervous about that occupation?
No, because it was just kind of like, you know, you do your searches and what can happen if you get in trouble. And it's like a 1 to 2 year charge, right?
Got it. Okay, so you were always looking at what charge could be and kind of weigh your pros and cons.
Of course.
All right.
And then eventually this guy didn't want it. This Uncle Tony didn't want to bump my fee up. I was making him so much money. I'm like, you got to give me more. Mm-hmm. Like 20% is not doing it. And he didn't want to. I was like, okay, if you don't do it, I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And he didn't believe that I was going to do it. And he didn't give it to me. And the next week after I had a nice little nest egg saved, I went to Costa Rica myself and I flew down there and I went office to office to figure out how to do it. And I learned how to set up a call center, an online platform, a website. And I became my own bookie.
Wow.
Yeah.
What if I told you that the idea that you only get parasites when you travel to some exotic country is flat wrong? Millions of Americans carry parasites right now, often without symptoms. For example, it's estimated that millions in the United States have been exposed to Toxocara, a parasitic worm, yet most never even know it. Parasites do not need a plane ticket. They can enter through tap water, sushi, undercooked foods, or contaminated produce. Some strains live in all stages, eggs, larvae, adults, hidden in your gut, releasing toxins that sabotage your energy and digestion. That's why I'm excited about Parify, Kim Rogers' 30-day full-spectrum parasite cleanse. The kit works by clearing parasites, worms, candida, and heavy metals, targeting parasites in all life stages, supporting gut health, detox pathways, and toxin removal. It's taken orally, daily for 30 days with precise dosing. I'm actually doing it myself right now. I started with the lymph cleanse, then I'm doing the Parify. Want to dive deep? I did a full interview with Kim Rogers, the worm queen herself, where we expose all the myths, understand the facts, and show how to protect your body. Listen to that episode if you haven't already. Meanwhile, go to rogershood.com and use the code Rachel to get 10% off of your order. That's R-A-C-H-E-L for 10% off. Give it a try. Maybe your body's missing link is hiding inside. Let's do this together. Again, it's rogershood.com, rogershood.com, and use the code Rachel for 10% off.
So was that hard at the beginning or you?
It was a learning curve, just like everything in life, okay. Right? And I learned it.
But you had your clients.
I already had my customers. Mm-hmm. So it was easy. Like I just pretty much rolled them over to a different phone number, a different website. Mm-hmm. And now they're betting with my company, Bet O-Dog.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And then you start to get agents, meaning people that work for you, just like you did in college.
Correct.
Your roommate. Okay. And how does that work?
So we call them sub bookies. We're an agent and I'm literally setting up, you know, same way. Like my fraternity brother has a package with 20 players that are underneath him. A professional athlete that played football has like 10 players underneath him.
So it's just expanding. It's
expanding the business.
Right. And you get a portion of whatever they're
giving. Them half.
Oh, I see.
Okay. I was more fair than Uncle Tony.
Got it.
That was my market. Like, okay, you want to work for me? You get half. We're partners.
And how many agents did you
have? I had 23 agents by the time I was arrested. Yeah.
So, all right. Now, what age are you? We're talking about when you
we're like 24 now.
24 now.
25, yeah.
And how much are you making a week?
Oh, the betting business is a great market. I mean, you have your good weeks and your bad weeks. It could go from, you know, $25,000 a week to $250,000 a week. It just depends how you, it's.
But are you losing money?
No,
ever?
You never lose. You never lose. Okay. And at the end of the year, you're never. I've never been negative in this gambling world.
Wow.
Okay. And I don't think anybody has.
Did you actually get out of it to go to the next stage, or you've always that was kind of always what you were doing on the side?
That was me. Yeah, that was my new job.
Okay. How'd you meet Matt Boyer?
Matt Boyer was actually a bookie, and he was a little older than me, mm-hmm. and he was already taking bets, and he had an office in Costa Rica.
Okay.
And we would just exchange information, and he started betting with me, actually.
Right.
And he had a gambling problem. And,
right.
He ended up losing. He beat me for, I want to say, like $150,000. Mm-hmm. I paid him. And then the next week he lost, like, I want to say like $70,000 or $80,000,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't pay me. And I was like, oh, hell no. This is like the cardinal rule. You don't just win and then the next week lose and don't pay me the money I just gave you. Like, that's stealing in my eyes, right?
Yeah.
And he says, I'll be back. I'm out of town. I said, no, that's not going to work. I said, I want my money. And he's like, no, man, I'll be back. And he got back into town. I said, where's my money? And he's like, you know what? Why don't you come get it? I said, oh, yeah, okay, what's the address? And I got in my Range Rover and I drove to his house in Orange County. And he didn't believe I was going to show up. And he told his wife at the time, he's like, hey, honey, this big USC football player's coming. It's not going to be pretty. He said he put on his shoes. He got outside, and I was just waiting for him. He goes, man, you got some balls. I said, well, you got some balls to try to stiff me. And then we became friends ever since. Like,
it's so funny. It's so funny you tell me this story. He sat in your chair, told me the exact same story, but I didn't know who you were then.
No way.
So I didn't know that was the story.
Yeah, that's me.
How fucked up is that? You listen to the episode, he tells the exact same story.
No way.
And he's like, and now this guy and I are like,
oh, yeah,
friends.
Did he
pay you?
Of course he paid.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I heard he took over your book of business.
That's true.
Got
it. He took over and he grew his business to like Fortune 500 status.
Right. Yes. Now, where were you when you heard he got in some trouble?
I was at prison.
Okay.
I was at prison and I saw that Ohtani scandal started. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe it. And I was like, wow, my buddy really got big, right? Like, I had professional.
Oh, you hadn't heard.
I had professional athletes. No, because you can't talk on the prison phone. Hey, how's the bookie business
right,
doing,
right? Of course.
So I was like reading the Wall Street Journal in prison. I was like, holy shit, that's my boy. And nobody believed me in prison. Like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So you guys don't even know. This guy and I, we would bet $80,000 on a golf hole. Fucking, you guys have no clue. And I got out and he's like, yeah, buddy, I got really big. And he started telling me who his clients were. I'm like, holy shit.
Right. So what did you think of the whole scandal? I mean, do you have an opinion?
Of course. I mean, I'm an athlete. I'm a adrenaline junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that all athletes have that same kind of adrenaline. And I believe that athletes gamble on sports. Now, I believe he was gambling on sports. And I believe that the sub bookie, Ohtani sub bookie, Ipe, was the fall guy.
That's
my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like the industry is trying to cover up for him still.
He's the greatest baseball player of all time. Biggest contract of ever, international. You know how bad that would be if he got in trouble for this? It would cut off everything.
But your opinion is that Ohtani was the one gambling, at least the first time.
Gambling with his interpreter.
Yeah, using his interpreter as
Listen, I know baseball gentleman. Players. I know baseball players that have played with these guys. They're like, come on, guys. We're all betting in the locker. They're betting on turtle races. Right. They'll bet anything.
Yeah. Have you talked to Matt since he's been in prison?
No, I can't.
Oh.
I'm a felon, so he can't call me on a prison phone.
Right.
To me, it would be a violation.
Did you get to talk to him before he went
I talked
in?
To his wife.
Did you ever give him any advice about
what
prison's like and what to do and how to
Yeah, I gave him a little... You know, a little tips and what not to do.
Yeah.
Because I spent a long time in prison, so I knew. You know, luckily for him, he got to go to a camp. I never got to go to camp due to the kingpin status on the drug charges.
Mm-hmm.
But his like white collar, so he got to go to a camp, which is I'm grateful for.
Right, right. Okay, so let's spool back. So you're in the bookie business. How all of a sudden do you get mixed up with the cartel?
I went international. I said, man, I'm so big now in the U.S. I want to expand. I'm just this ambitious kid now, right? And I go to, I tell my agents, I say, hey, let's go to anywhere in North America, Canada, Mexico, let's expand this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my agents brought me this whale out of Mexico, and I didn't know who he was. He was losing $250,000 a week,
mm-hmm.
and giving me bags of cash. I was like, man, whoever your player is, you got a whale. It's not my business to ask him who his player is. That's his client. Mm-hmm. You know? So I'm just like, keep that guy happy. Whatever he needs, we got him because that's the service I provided. And the guy finally lost. The guy finally won. I literally beat him for like $750,000 in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And he finally was about to win. And I called his agent. I said, hey, your client's going to win. Come over and grab this cash. I want to pay him on Monday morning. Because mm-hmm. in the bookie business, if you pay someone Monday, that means you're the real deal.
Yeah.
And I had his agent pay him Monday morning at 8 a.m. And the next day, his agent brings me an encrypted phone. And I was like, what's this? It's in BlackBerry. He's like, my uncle, who's my client, wants you to use.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Use this phone to talk to him. I'm like, what? What is this? Mm-hmm. Three passwords. I'm entering the passwords in. The phone doesn't have any kind of microphone. It's taken out. It has no camera. Has no GPS. It's just like a brick. Mm. I'm like, what is this? Right? Like, it's crazy. And I'm entering these three passwords and this guy says, I like the way you do business. That's all it said. It was like an email.
So wait, because I've heard this story, but your agent didn't get upset that he was taken out of the,
No, because he probably knew what was going on.
Got
like,
it.
He's like, hey, you provide this service. You tell me whatever people want, we'll do. So it's like, here. I'm not going to cut him out.
Right.
My agent's handling all the collections and everything.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to understand that.
Yeah.
All right. So you start talking to this guy and you realize, what is he saying?
I don't realize anything yet. I tell him anything you need, you're a great customer mm-hmm. and whatever we can do for you. And then 2 days later, it's like, hey, do you have $100,000 I can borrow in the United States and I'll pay you back in a wire? I'm like, yeah, of course. I'm a bookie. I got money all over the United States. Mm-hmm. He's like, I need $100,000 dropped off in San Diego. I'm like, okay, what part? Vista. Boom. 20 minutes later, one of my runners drops off $100,000. He goes, okay, I got 110,000 wire for you. Where do you want it? I'm like, send it to Costa Rica. It's
worth it. So you're making $10,000.
I'm making 10% on my money.
Okay.
It's math. Like, this is what you learn in school, right? 10% a day? Who couldn't do that? Mm-hmm. So it's not like, for me, it's just a numbers game. He's like, hey, I need it in North Carolina, another $100,000.
And you're not asking questions like what the money. What
Remember,
is the
money? I'm that concierge. Right. Whatever he wants. Like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything illegal. I'm
right.
Okay, a little exchange of money. The guy's already losing $250,000 a week on me. Like, who cares? So I literally just start doing this, and I'm making 10%. And I'm like, this is easy. And it's like I'm cleaning this money now. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Right? I keep coming. And then he says, hey, I need you to pick up my $1 million. I'm like, pick up? You just had me dropping off. Mm-hmm. He's like, I got some money in Brownsville, Texas, and we're not allowed over there. It's rival territory. I'm like, rival territory? I start to scratch my head. I'm like, man, now I know I'm a little deeper than I thought, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking rival, okay, this has got to be a gang, some kind of gangster.
Right. And you've never spoken to him on
No, it's an encrypted phone.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't ask questions. I'm just whatever he needs. He's like, yeah, pick up a million and you're going to make 100,000. I'm like, in one day, like 100 grand. What an easy lick. Mm-hmm. And I hired a pilot. First time I ever bought a private jet, right? Or paid for a private jet. Mm-hmm. Hired one of my muscles to come with me, this guy named Tank, who's in my documentary. Mm-hmm. He brings in one of his UFC buddies, and I'm literally in this private jet in a turboprop. We fly to Brownsville in this private airport, and we land, and I'm telling this, we'll call him El Jefe. I'm mm-hmm. saying, hey, El Jefe, I'm here in Brownsville. Mm-hmm. He goes, in 5 minutes, there's going to be a truck that pulls up in the parking lot. And sure enough, 5 minutes later, there's this gardener that comes out of this pickup truck. And he has a bag, and he goes, este para el jefe, this is for the boss. And he gives me the bag. I'm like, okay, this is crazy. Let me get out of here.
But it's as easy as that. It's he that comes quick. To you, you get right back on the plane.
Right back on the plane.
Okay.
And I get on
and
the
it goes
plane.
Without a hitch.
No, and easy. Like, I was like, wow, that was cinchy, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I told my pilot, okay, let's go to Torrance Airport. And I land in Torrance Airport, and I'm there. And saying, where do you want it? He's like, drop it off in Riverside. And he gave me an address. I took my 100 grand out, and I drop off 900,000. I pay my pilot, pay my workers. I just profited like 76 grand. I'm like, wow, that was fun. Like,
when that, can we that, do
this
it again?
I like this. Mm-hmm. This is fun. You got to remember, every time I'm doing this, I'm like, man, my dad was a construction worker. He never had the chance. I just made his salary.
Yeah.
Right? Like in one day. Like, yeah. So it's a feeling, a great feeling. Mm-hmm. And it just got bigger and bigger, and the favors went to another favor. And then he eventually said, how would you like to do what you're doing now, but in Australia? And I'm going to pay you $1 million a day. I'm like, fuck, where do I sign up, yeah. Right?
So you had to move to Australia.
Yeah.
Okay. And in the meantime, are you still having your agents doing all the regular
bookings? Oh, yeah. I got now I have a manager that works full-time. I got runners. This is a well-oiled machine. I don't have to do anything.
So not only the money that you're getting from El Jefe is coming in, but you have all this shit going on.
Yeah.
So you are at the pinnacle. Like, you are at the highest end. You're making what you have always wanted to make. And you are probably exceeding what some of these guys you went to college
Oh, every one of them. My college, all my friends that are in that NFL, I was probably making more money than that at the time. Right. Yeah.
So you moved to Australia.
Yeah.
And you bring some of your guys with you, or you have to start all over?
No, I have to put together a team.
Okay.
And he says, you have to, I have the product there and you need to figure out a way to move it. Mm-hmm. He goes, I'm like, okay, product. Okay. What kind of product? Right. You're just like, okay, what is this?
He's,
you ask and he says that cocaine. And I was like, oh boy. And now I know I'm in a little deeper than just handling money.
And now have you looked at the consequences?
Of course.
Okay,
of course.
What's the consequence if you get caught?
Anything over 2.5 kilos is a life sentence.
So in Australia, I don't know much about Australia, but I know that they're more serious than America.
Very serious.
Okay.
But my mindset was like, okay, if I never touch it, I'll be all right. Mm. Like, I'm the type of guy that, remember, I was scared to run from Fraternity Row to my fraternity house with 8 ounces. So like that scared me. Like, so I was going to get to Australia and I was going to have someone handle everything. And I was just going to sit back on the encrypted phone and become this logistics quarterback. Right.
Right.
And so I literally had to recruit this guy that was in the international drug business, but for weed. And he was an old Italian gangster that I got referred to from a friend that was in the weed business. Mm-hmm. And he told me, if you want to get into the international business, you got to talk to Uncle Louie.
Okay.
And Uncle Louis is a gangster. He used to work with the Lucchese family.
Wait, now how does the trust work when you're I know, like, listen, I lived in Vegas. I ran nightclubs in Vegas. I dealt with very similar things on a different level than you. But I know that your Rolodex is a big thing. My Rolodex was a big thing. But the trust and the respect and the credibility was also a big thing. So how are you finding these people and then trusting them to be who they were, do what they were going to do, like,
it's a referral basis, but you're also feeling them out. Like,
right.
You and I can talk right now, and I know that you're going to get shit done, right?
Yeah.
And I know that you're going to get me in the best club and get me the prettiest girls at my table, right?
Right.
That's how I know how to read people.
Right.
I can read the room. So when I met Uncle Louie.
It's a good skill that not a lot of people have.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
And I met this Uncle Louie in San Diego, and I knew right away when I started talking to him, and he told me we're not talking about any business in the United States. I knew this guy was a bona fide gangster, right? I was like, okay, this guy knows what he's. He's not going to talk to me in the U.S. because he knows we could get a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, you got to come to Naples, Italy, where I'm from. I was like, fuck. Hey, Rachel, all I thought about was that $1 million a day, right?
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, I'm going to figure it out. So I fly to Naples, Italy. He's in this villa, fucking beautiful home, two homes on this vineyard. And we're talking, and I'm telling him, like, I have product in Australia. Mm-hmm. And he's like, man, you don't have product over there. It's impossible. He's looking at me. I'm some punk kid, right? Mm-hmm. 25 years old, I think, at the time. He's like, it's impossible, man. He goes, I've been in this business for 30 years. He goes, no one can get product over there. I'm like, I have it. He didn't believe me. He says, don't waste my time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, I was bummed out. I was like, this guy doesn't believe me. So he told me, he's like, if you have the product, you go there and you tell me when you see it with your own eyes. And now I got to tell El Jefe that if I have a guy that's going to do it or not, because he wants to know. And I'm like, I lied to both of them. I tell El Jefe, hey, I got the guy. He goes, okay, good. Now get to Australia. So now I fly to Australia. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in Australia, and El Jefe is ready to drop this stuff off. But now I got to lie to the other guy in Italy because he wants to know if I've seen it.
And say that you've seen it.
So now I got to lie to him and be like, hey, I've seen it. Get over here. I haven't seen shit.
Right.
But I've just taken the risk.
Right.
I've been gambling my whole life, right? Yeah. So he goes, he flies over. And literally 2 days later, he's there. And he's like, where's it at? I'm like, hang on, right? Like, I'm on my encrypted phone. And El Jefe puts me in the Four Seasons Hotel. And he's like, get a room. And as soon as you get a room, message me the room number. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I don't want to touch it. So I got Uncle Louie a room right next door. I was in 426. He was in 428. Mm-hmm. And I remember I said, okay, Uncle Louie, as soon as this comes, I'm going to knock on your door, on your wall, because he's right there.
Yeah.
And just, like, get ready. Because Rachel, I am scared. Mm-hmm. Right? And I get a knock on my door, and Uncle Louie has this, or excuse me, El Jefe has this guy deliver this box, and he's in this DHL outfit. And I was like, this is crazy. And I'm holding this box, and it's heavy. Mm-hmm. And I'm banging on the wall. I said, Uncle Louie, get over here now. And he comes over, and he opens it up. He goes, holy shit, nephew. He goes, you weren't lying. He says, you really have this is good product. He literally cut it open, just like in the movies. Put it to his nose and did a little taster. And he's like, that's fucking pure grade, 100% Colombian cocaine.
Right.
Like, he was blown away. And 20 minutes later, he comes back with $1 million cash. There was 10 kilos. They're 100,000 each. It was this the test run, right?
Right.
20 minutes. And the deal I made with El Jefe is I would get 50,000 on every kilo, and El Jefe would get 50,000. And Uncle Louie would get 50 on his own. He would charge 150.
Okay.
So Uncle Louie had 500,000. I had 500,000. El Jefe had 500,000. But
it.
I'm responsible for El Jefe's. Mm-hmm. Uncle Louie goes, okay, when can we get more? I'm on the encrypted phone. And El Jefe says, 20 more tomorrow. So now 2 million gets dropped off. Mm-hmm. So now I'm giving $1 million to El Jefe, $1 million for me. Now I'm making my $1 million a day.
Right.
We work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We take the weekends off. We do it again and again.
And then it just continues.
Just continues.
Week by week.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, in the meantime, how are you living? Like, how are you spending your money? What are you, how are you living?
I'm scared shitless. I'm a ghost.
Okay.
I'm living in a studio apartment.
No way.
Yeah.
What?
El Jefe told me, you are a ghost.
Right.
He made me wear a suit and tie.
It was important that you don't stand.
Yeah, he want me walking down the street like everybody else. And in Sydney, everyone wears suits and ties, mm-hmm. like businessmen.
Okay.
And I'm rolling around like a suitcase like a businessman. No one would know there's, you know, $2 million in cash in there.
Right. So you're not rolling around going to strip clubs at night, throwing cash everywhere, living in huge homes.
No.
But I did see you upgraded your father's home.
Yes, that was later on.
Okay.
Yeah, I did that.
Got it. Is that where he lives now?
No.
Okay.
He retired.
I always wondered why you took that little plot of land and built up in this fabulous way, but you didn't just buy him a new house. You loved the idea of this childhood address.
No, I was developing. I was a builder. Mm-hmm. Like, it was my dream to become a developer, a real estate developer.
I got it.
And then I was like, you know what? This is the perfect starting point. And that's where I started my development business.
Right.
I did that one, and I just started to grow it.
And did that? I didn't even know about that. So did you continue?
Oh yeah, that was a very successful business.
Really?
Yeah, I built over 100 homes.
But your dad said he didn't feel comfortable living there.
No, it was too much for him.
Right.
You got to remember, my dad's this frugal man that saved every dollar he's had.
Right.
Like, he's not like me.
Right. Okay. So go back to Australia. So you're laying low. You're making $1 million a day.
I'm literally in this apartment and I have money. I have stacks. I mean, we're talking stacks. I have $10 million in my apartment.
Right. I was making $10,000 a week in Vegas cash. Yeah. I remember them saying, you cannot go to the bank with more than $9,000.
That's right.
Flagged. So I started to have cash underneath my bed as well, because sometimes someone would give me a $100,000 chip or whatever it was. And I was like, what do I do? So I would go and spend it on shit. I'd go buy a car and a this, and I ended up buying a house. But I see that you're talking about $10 million in your home. So what are you doing with this cash?
Putting in dishwashers, putting in microwaves, cabinets, attics, Tumi luggage underneath the bed.
And aren't you also panicking about—
I'm drinking wine. I'm drinking, popping Xanax. I'm so stressed out, right. Rachel. At some point, I'm even doing lines of the Coke. Because I'm like, fuck it.
So you're not necessarily getting to enjoy.
No, it's very nerve-wracking. And Uncle Louie and I are so stressed now because he's got the same money issue. And I have twice the money issue because I got El Jefes. And we are literally like panicking.
Oh, right. And so you have El Jefes. You can't even get it to him.
Yeah. Okay. And then I finally message El Jefe like, hey, when are you going to have your people pick it up? And he goes, bueno, which is like white boy in Spanish. He goes, that's why I sent you over there. And I was like, okay, this makes sense.
All right. So now for people listening, you cannot just go and get on an airplane with a bunch of money.
Definitely.
You cannot stick it in a box and send it.
Definitely
in the mail.
No.
So you have to figure out what is laundering, right? Which is changing it into something, what, tangible, or changing the form of the money to get it out of your hands,
correct.
Right?
And you have to exchange. The most hardest part is exchanging the Australian dollar into a U.S. dollar. Mm. So you got to remember, I have all this money. I got to start exchanging it to U.S. currency because I can't take an Australian currency into the U.S.
Right. Okay. I see.
So now I'm exchanging and literally have fake IDs I'm using at these exchange houses. Mm-hmm. And I run out of $100 bills and $50 bills from the U.S. So now I start exchanging for euro notes because the euro note at the time was like $750, $700. Like if you got a $500 euro note, which is very common, it's $750 U.S. So I was like, you know what? I know I can exchange euro notes easier.
Oh,
I started buying the $500 euro note. Okay. So I'd buy like 20 of those every day and I put them in comic books. And I'd take the comic book. And I'd put it in an eBay package, and I would vacuum seal it. So if you opened it, you just see a comic book in a vacuum seal package. And I literally started sending like 5 comic books a week out.
To El Jefe?
No, to the U.S.
Oh, to
remember
the U.S.
Remember El Jefe? Just to get out of the country.
Just to get it out. Okay. So who was getting that? Was this when Tank comes in?
Well, yeah, everybody was involved. We had P.O. boxes and addresses and girlfriends and just anybody that would take a package, right?
Okay.
And
they're just holding it.
They're just holding it, yeah.
Got it. So at some point, a guy named Robin Hood 702 comes in your life.
Correct.
This becomes the worst person, I guess, that you've ever met in your life.
Yeah, no doubt.
Tell us what happens.
No, this gambler, him and I go into a business agreement. I met through my girlfriend at the time, and she knew him from Vegas, and he was this supposedly this high roller. Mm-hmm. And he was known for blackjack, and she told me, I think this guy is the guy. Like, he's a professional blackjack player, and he has this this foundation, whatever. He goes and plays, and basically he wins money on the table, and he donates money to, like, a kid in need, right?
Right.
And so I meet this guy, and he tells me his pitch, and I says, it's great. What would you charge me to do this business? I have this gambling customer in Australia that's losing a bunch of money, and I need to get it out of Australia. He's like, let's do 25%, and we agree on that. And he flies over to Australia, and we'll give him $1.5 million for the first test run.
Right.
And he does great. Within 48 hours, he literally goes to the casino. He puts the money down. They give him chips, and he starts playing at the table. And about 2 hours later, he just claps his hands and says, hey, I'm not feeling it. Cash me out. And what do? They don't give you the chips back. They cash out with a check.
Oh, got it, yeah.
So now he can take that check, and he could go to the sister casino in the Venetian or the Palazzo, right? And now he flies back with that check to the U.S., goes to Las Vegas, and he's this high roller. They already know who he is.
And so you were giving him 25%. You weren't asking him to gamble and make 25%,
no,
do all these things that he ultimately ends up having some issues with. But okay, it's just
a payment. Yeah, it's a payment, and everyone wins.
Okay.
And he does it Literally in like 48 hours.
So it goes fine the first time.
Smooth, yeah.
So you're like, this is now the route.
Yeah.
This is the guy.
And I'm telling El Jefe now, I'm like, hey, this is the route. This is what we're going to do. This is so much faster than the Euro notes, the UGG boots, you know, the gold, the silver. I had so many different ways I was doing it, and it was just a headache. You know, it took forever.
Right.
This guy just...
And at this point, had El Jefe gotten anything from you?
No, but now he did.
Okay.
So that 1.5 literally got cleaned. I think his commission on it was, I want to say, like $375,000.
Okay.
He gives me money in the U.S., and I distribute that to El Jefe.
Yeah.
And
okay, so then we do a second run.
He comes back. He wants to do 2.5 now. Mm-hmm. And I give him 2.5 million. Mm-hmm. And literally, he gets to the casino the same way he's supposed to do it. 3 hours later, I get a phone call. I'm like, gosh, that was fast. Mm-hmm. I answer. He goes, we got a problem. I lost the money. I'm like, wait a minute. What do you mean you lost the money? You didn't have money to lose. You could lose 25%, right? That's mm-hmm. your commission. He says, I need you to bring me more money to win it back. I'm like, no, I'm not bringing you any more money. In fact, I'm actually going to come and see if this guy stole the money, because that's now my mind's thinking he stole my money.
Got it. But there's like wins and loss sheets, right? Like you could see
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you could see it. Yeah.
It's really it
little, okay. My personal trainer knew the pit boss at the Star Casino. He says, dude, I'll go ask the pit boss myself. He's a friend.
Okay.
Let's see.
Like, and did he lose it?
Supposedly he lost it. I don't know how much he lost. Mm-hmm. There's rumors that he lost some and kept some, but I don't know. I can't answer that.
So what do you think he was thinking? Because we see, if you watch the docuseries, and I want people to go watch the docuseries, and I've spoken to him, as you know. His thing is that he was so scared, and he's a degenerate gambler, and he lost it. And also he was upset and felt like, you know, he was being harassed to do this stuff, and he just wanted no part of it, and he lost all of it.
Okay, I think anybody that watches the documentary mm-hmm. and sees that if someone laundered $1.5 million and got paid a commission for that, mm-hmm. why would anybody want to threaten them for doing that? Right. Like, would I threaten someone that just helped me out? Like,
well, no. Also, you would think that if they'd done it once before, they know what's going on. They know what's expected.
Yeah, they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So to come back around and do it and then lose tells me you're a degenerate gambler. Mm-hmm. That's what it tells me.
Yeah.
And it's my personal opinion. I don't believe he lost all of it. Okay. I believe there was some foul play.
But it's interesting, like, why do it and then pocket some? Because at the end of the day, you were going to be paying him a percentage.
For
a long time. And this could have gone on and on.
Some people don't think like that.
Okay.
Especially degenerate gamblers.
So that's what I was going to say. The most logical answer is that he is a degenerate gambler and lost it.
Oh,
and then it all got fucked up from there. So here we are. And just for time purposes, and again, because people should go and watch the show, it was very clear that this is where the whole story heats up. And all of a sudden, you want to make sure he doesn't leave the country, and he's trying to go get Rick Leventhal, and they're trying to figure out how to get away from you. You want to make sure that you're getting his passport, and you've got your trainer, and you've got some money in your safe house,
yeah.
Whatever. And you want to get it away and put it in a hotel.
Yep.
You have $700,000. I mean, sorry that I'm telling you.
Yeah, no, you got it.
$700,000. You put it in a suitcase. You give it to your trainer. Tell me what happens.
My trainer goes to the hotel that he's supposed to meet Robin Hood. Robin Hood had $300,000 left in his hotel room. Mm-hmm. I told him, bring that $300 to the hotel room. You're going to meet my trainer. My trainer had a bag of $700. We're going to add that $300. We're going to have a bag of $1 million. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get money out of my apartment because mm-hmm. Robin Hood knew where I lived. Mm-hmm. And so he called and says, hey, I'm on my way to the hotel room. Mm-hmm. So I sent my trainer. And as soon as my trainer got to the hotel room, there was four police there waiting for him.
Right. So Robin Hood, what he had done is called the police.
Called the police.
And so this is where this all starts to go south.
Yes. Okay. They arrest Sean Carolyn, my trainer. They find the $700,000.
So now you're out another $700,000. So you're at 3.2 that you're out to the cartel.
Correct.
Okay. Like, what were you doing?
Panicking. <Okay. laughs> I didn't know what to do. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I was freaking out. Mm-hmm. And my trainer gets out of jail. He's like, dude, we have a problem. That Robin Hood's singing like a canary.
Right. And Robin Hood had left and gone back to America.
Correct.
So now you don't have a lot of people in the inner circle. The inner circle is starting to fall apart.
Yes.
Now you're thinking, how do I get back? Well, first of all, what's El Jefe saying?
He's not saying anything yet.
Okay, so he doesn't know.
Yeah, he doesn't know, and I'm not telling him.
Right. So from what I understand, you start to involve some other people because you need to get that $700,000
yes.
back. And some guy comes up with a cockamamie story that it's his. Maybe it's not cockamamie, but it seemed pretty good at the time. An attorney that said it was his money, and he all these people just want a percentage, and this is why they get involved and agree to lie, right? But I guess the negative in this is that now you've opened up this lie to so many people that it causes some problems.
Yes, it causes a lot of problems because now we're trying to get the 700 grand that got picked off back. Mm-hmm. And this lawyer made me go tell this fake make-believe story to law enforcement
right.
in the United States, which was like, you know, in my business, you never go to law enforcement ever.
Right.
Like that's the rule number one.
Sure.
But the attorney says it's not a U.S. matter, so don't worry about it. So I took his legal advice because he's an attorney and mm-hmm. I talked about this fake story mm-hmm. of how the money, you know, was given.
Right.
And it was all fugazi. It was all lies.
Right.
And, you know, watch the documentary.
Yeah. And again, because I don't want to get too into it because it's so good and fine. So now eventually you get caught. And actually I want people to see the documentary for that too. But let's talk about prison for a minute.
Yeah.
Tell me about what it's like to have those doors slam and you uh-huh. hear what? You have 21 years?
Well, 21 years, yeah.
Yeah, so you're in there and you're like, fuck, are you crying? Are you like, holy shit, my life's over, I want to kill myself? Like, what are you thinking?
Well, remember Dad said we don't cry.
Okay. So you're
you
not
can't cry in prison.
Cry in the shower.
You cry in the shower, yeah. So I played it like a basketball game. There's four quarters. Mm. And I said to myself, 5 years is first quarter. You know, 10 years is you're at halftime. Mm-hmm. And that's how I put it in my mindset. And I woke up every day and I said, man, it's time to rehabilitate, right? The judge told me this is 21 years to rehabilitate. And yeah. I took that serious. Okay. And I went in there and I was like, okay, most 90% of people in here are just eating soups all day, laying on their bed, depressed. I'm like, this is not going to be me. Mm-hmm. You're not going to break me. You know, I'm an athlete. I'm not going to break.
And could you work out?
I worked out every day.
They have a gym or like you just?
No, I made a lot of calisthenics.
Okay.
I mean, eventually I did find a prison that had a gym,
okay.
but it took a while to get there.
Okay.
A lot of calisthenics, a lot of pull-ups, a lot of push-ups, dips, stuff off your toilet, you know.
Okay.
You're doing like inverted push-ups off your toilet seat.
Okay. Do you get outside? Can you
yeah.
run?
Yeah. You get outside like 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour at night.
Okay.
And I'm running.
And the food, how do you combat dealing
terrible.
With the food? Right.
Oh, it's awful. You're getting your 2,000 calories, but it's coming from like carbohydrates.
Got it.
Yeah, it's garbage.
Are you making friends?
You don't want to make friends in prison, but you're making acquaintances, right?
So you're lonely.
Of course you're lonely, but you're meeting people that are part of your race. Like in prison, you can't be part of the blacks or the Mexicans, the guys that I played sports with my whole life.
Oh,
you have
really?
You have to be with your own race. So since I'm white, I have to run with the whites. There's politics in prison.
What was the worst thing that happened to you in prison?
I mean, for me, the worst thing was, you know, being during COVID. They literally had us locked down for like nearly almost 2 years. I think we had one shower a week. We were in our 6x8 cell for 23 and a half hours a day.
And TV?
No TV.
Books?
No, you could get books, but the worst part was just like the meals, like box lunches for literally like a year and a half.
Right.
No coffee, nothing.
Okay, but
that
doesn't
me,
sound terrible. It sounds,
that,
even if you told me to sit in this room for a week and not leave, like I would have a panic attack.
Oh,
I can't
yeah.
imagine.
You can't move.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful.
And you have a roommate at the time?
Yeah, you always have a roommate.
You like play cards?
I mean, you could only do so much.
Oh my God.
You got to remember the toilet's in the room. So when you have to use the restroom, it's right next to his head.
Right.
Like his bed's right next to the toilet seat.
Were you on the top?
Always the top.
Why?
Because what happens is if you're on the bottom and someone's like up top and eating that are dandruff or whatever, it's coming down on the guy below.
Okay, so
I always wanted the top. Yeah,
okay.
That's my thing.
Got it. So your personality and your hustle comes out and you yeah. start to run a business in there.
Yeah, I went back to school, actually. I got a master's degree.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I started writing my book, The California Kid. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, now what? What am I going to do? Like, mm-hmm. I got my master's degree. How am I going to use it? And I started a business, and it was actually a mistake. I didn't know I was going to start this business until it happened. It was an accident. I started taking my protein shakes, and what I would do is I'd take an empty peanut butter jar, and I put a bag of milk in there, because in prison you get bags of milk.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a bag of milk in there, and I would slice up bananas, and then I put a little peanut butter from the commissary, and we got these cheap protein shakes, and I'd throw them in there, and I'd shake them up like a shake,
mm-hmm.
protein shake. And in prison we don't have refrigeration, so you use a mop bucket, and you fill it with ice. So every day I'd put my protein shake on ice. So when I worked out with my crew, I'd come back and I'd drink the protein shake.
Mm-hmm.
I get back one day and my cellie says, hey, we have no ice. The ice machine's broken. He says, there's like 2 inches left. I said, well, what do you want to do? He goes, if we put some salt on there, it'll keep it cold. We'll be good. So I was like, all right, throw some salt. So we throw some salt. I go work out. 4 hours later, I come back and my cellie says, hey, grab your shake. I grab my shake and it's frozen. I'm like, it's frozen, man. He's like, just eat it. So I eat it. It's like, dude, it's like protein ice cream. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I told you it was good, huh? And I'm like, dude, the ding, 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 like this bell went off in my head, this hustle mentality I have. I'm like, dude, ice cream in prison? Like, this is going to be my hustle.
Right.
And I wanted to see if it would work. So I made 7 one day, and I gave them to all my workout crew and a couple of guys in the cells. And they're like, dude, this is awesome. And they're like, you should sell it. I'm like, what am I going to sell it for? And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to say $15 because I don't really want to make it. But I was like, if someone pays $15 for this, it costs me $1.50 to make. I'm like, that's 1,000% more.
And you mean sell it within the prison?
Prison, that's allowed. Well, it's not allowed.
Okay. Oh, so, but up until then, how does it work? Your dad's putting money in the commissary?
Yes. Yeah. I'm working. I'm making gloves for the U.S. military. I'm a sewer. Yeah. So I would sew like the fingers on the gloves.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
With like a machine or?
Yeah.
That's cool. Did you learn how to do that there?
Yeah.
Okay. So I saw from the docuseries, you have like a butler.
I had a prison butler.
Prison butler.
Prison butlers are cheap.
Okay.
It's like $5 a week.
Great.
And they do anything. They make my meal prep. They clean the room.
Okay.
They clean your
clothes.
Are
these considered like little bitches in prison or
yeah,
like?
Yeah, that's what I call them. But you can't use that word in prison though.
Oh, good. So you have like a staff working for you. You're starting to make a lot of money.
I start making these ice creams now on the regular. I got like 5 employees and we're all making these ice creams in the mop buckets and we're shaking these things and we're selling them for football games.
Right. And all right, so you're doing well and you're kind of, I wouldn't say happy, but like you found a purpose.
Yeah, no, it was fun.
Okay. And you find out, again, this is long story short, you find out you're getting out early.
Yeah.
It's been 9.5 years. Yep. Did you flip out? I mean, when you found out that ultimate phone call, okay, you're going to be out of here.
Yeah, it was like you got goosebumps. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever think that would happen?
No, not at all. It was like literally people say, you won the lottery in life. I did, yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
You get out, and what made you think, oh, I want to continue doing this ice cream thing?
Well, everyone's like, what do you want to do? I'm sitting in the halfway house, right? I'm like, man, what am I going to do? I'm a convicted felon. Mm-hmm. And then I start doing some homework and I'm like, there's nobody that makes a protein ice cream. Like I was like, why is that? And then I remember talking to my friend and—
Well, there's like Halo, but I think it's like 4
there's
flavors
like 5
or something.
Grams of protein per serving.
What's, oh, okay.
Like, yeah, it's not a lot
of protein. And they don't even have a lot of flavors.
And they don't taste that good.
Sucks.
Yeah, they suck. And I called my buddy from here in Florida and he's in Fort Lauderdale and I tell him what I was doing. And he's like, well, how was prison? I said, you know, prisons suck, man. But I said, man, I was hustling protein ice cream. Like I used to sell that cocaine. And he's like, really? I said, he's like, dude, why don't you start a protein ice cream brand? There's nobody out here that has it. And like, I was like, how would we do that? And he put together this team and it was awesome. My buddy Roland came through and he got me a CEO with the law degree to help me so I don't get in trouble again.
Right.
And he's got me a branding guy. And
so it was the legitimate way.
Yes, a legitimate.
So where, what is it called?
It's called California Ice Protein.
And it's sold where?
It's sold in over 150 stores and gyms in Florida, Miami mostly.
Okay. How many grams
California,
of protein?
20 grams of protein per bar. I actually brought you some. It's great. We direct to consumer, door to door. You go online. You can buy, 6 4 packs and we send them straight to you.
Right. I love it. Two things. You've lived such a big life, an extraordinary life, and you have that addiction, I would say, to things that give you that rush.
Yeah.
And you're a hustler. I mean, I get it. I'm the same way. What is going to keep you away from the gambling and the bookieing? And because these are all easy ways for you to just make that money back really quick.
The easy scores. Well, the judge already told my lawyer, if I ever see Mr. Hansen in my courtroom again, he's getting a life sentence. That's enough right there.
Okay,
to scare
so,
me.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't have that urge. I have a new, like my new rush is like speaking now, telling people about what I went through. Mm-hmm. And when I get in front of like 100 guys on a football team or 50 guys on a baseball team, and I'm telling them my story, and their jaws are on the ground because they can't believe it.
Yeah.
I tell them like, "Hey, this just gambling, guys.
Right.
If you guys get involved in throwing a game or doing something illegal," I said, "This is where it started for me." And I ended up working for the biggest cartel in the world. I said, "You guys don't want to go down that path."
Yeah.
It happens to athletes because we love adrenaline. We love to win.
Yeah.
And it's just a lesson learned. Like that's my new rush.
Right.
Like, watching these kids' faces going, wow. And just seeing them want to speak to me and ask questions after.
So are you going to try and start going on an official speaking tour and get a manager for all that?
Yeah, I would like to. I've been doing it. I've probably spoke to three, four colleges already. Law enforcement has hired me now to speak for them. I've probably got like six bookings for next year already. And they, they're awesome. They love to hear my story.
Right.
And I think they like to, you know, see how my mind works. Cause it's, you know, I was a legitimate kingpin and they want to see like, what were your routes into, you know, other countries? What were your ideas? What made you do this? And I think my knowledge is pretty decent, and I think I can help them. And, you know, they gave me a second chance in life. I tell people if they didn't arrest me, I would have died for sure.
Yeah.
So it's like a blessing. It's my give back.
Right. And you, as long as you look at it, that time in prison was your time out to like think about what, you know, to kind of recalibrate your mind to be like, what am I going to do going forward? Which, you know, brings me to one of my last questions, which is like, really, now you're free, right? You could have spent another 10 years in prison at this point, and who knows what could have gone wrong in there, and you in there longer, whatever. What are you going to do with your freedom? Like your dad sort of says this in the docuseries, and it gave me goosebumps to hear your dad be like, I was so nervous. Like, what are you going to do? But it's like, what's your bucket list? Like, do you want to be working for a company? You obviously have that personality and that skill.
I'm never going to work for a company. I'm going to be the company. I want to be the Jeff Bezos of protein ice cream, right? I'm a hustler. I'm going to get to the top. And I like nice things, no doubt, but I don't need those things. I've lived that life. Like, I wake up every morning and people are like, dude, do you ever have bad days anymore? I go, you guys don't even know. Like, every day I wake up, I like have to pinch myself because you're like, am I really out right now? Like, I won the lottery.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I don't care about the money. Like, I've lived that life. I know it's going to come eventually because my hustle mentality is not going to just let me be down here forever. Right.
Yeah.
But it's a humbling experience, and I needed that because if I didn't have it, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah. Last question. What is the most misunderstood thing about what you've been through or about you in general?
I'm not a violent person. You know, I'm a big teddy bear. I tell people I'm a koala bear, right? I'm like, I've never hurt anybody, you know. People, you threaten. Listen, no one ever got hurt, right? I threatened Robin Hood. Yeah, he lost $2.5 million, but no one ever got hurt.
Yeah.
And the way we collect money is it's a scare tactic to get paid.
Right.
At the end of the day, I'm a big koala bear.
Okay. Tell people where they can, again, remind them where they can get your ice cream, where they can buy your book, and where they can see the docuseries.
Docuseries is on Amazon Prime. It's called Cocaine Quarterback by Mark Wahlberg's Unrealistic Ideas. My ice cream is CaliforniaIceProtein.com. And my book is TheCaliforniaKid.com.
Awesome. Awesome. And last thing, I mean, what an honor that someone like Mark Wahlberg would come in and be like, dude, I love your story. I want to make it, right?
Yeah, they did an awesome job.
They did an awesome job.
They put it together perfectly. They covered every base, like to the T.
Yeah.
Like, that's the real story. If anybody wants to read these other articles out there, those aren't the real stories.
Yeah.
The real story had to be told through me. I was involved, and I couldn't speak on my story until I got released or my case was over.
Yeah.
And finally, when Wahlberg's team came, they're like, dude, they did fact checks for literally like 3 years to make sure all this was accurate. You know, this thing took 5 years to make.
Right. Have you ever met Mark? Have you?
Just through Zooms. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure we're going to meet one day. Yeah. We're going to do they're working on like a pre-development of a scripted series.
So amazing.
So that would be fun.
And I guess, sorry, one more question. What would be your advice for someone who is going on this path? Like, what is your biggest regret that you want to tell people about now?
Not being myself, right? A lot of kids experience this because they're trying to fit in and they're trying to be someone they're not. Just be yourself, right? If I was myself and went down that straight and narrow path and didn't cross over into illegal activity because I wanted to be somebody else, you know, you're not going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's my advice, is be yourself. Don't cut corners in life and try to be someone you're not.
Yeah. But I love that you've been to the bottom of the barrel. You know how to climb back out.
There's only one way up, right? Yeah. We're at rock bottom right now.
Right. But like, good for you. You said before we started, you know, I said, do you have a girlfriend? You're like, who's going to want to date me? Look at you. You're gorgeous. You obviously have a good head on your shoulder. You've been through a lot of shit. You're going to find your way out. You're going to make somebody very happy. And I hope one day you have a wonderful wife and kids, and you know, you can give that to your dad, and you know,
yeah, no
like that would be something really important, and share your life with someone, because I feel like a lot of your story, you've been on your own,
yeah,
and you've been alone even though you're doing so much, and that kind of makes me sad for you, yeah. And I cannot wait for the time when you feel like you have a person of your own that you, and kids of your own that you can like share what a great guy you are and give them those skills. You have some real skills that clearly you shouldn't be ashamed about.
Yeah.
Used them in the wrong ways. We all have in some way or another. And it's awesome that here you are, you get a second chance and you're making the best of it. So honestly, I wish you the best.
Thanks so much, Rachel.
It's been an honor to meet you.
Thank you, you too.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.